Are you a 3PL spending more time and money than you'd like recruiting and onboarding logistics roles? Then it's time to check out Rapido Solutions Group, the leaders in nearshore logistics staffing. Located right next door in Mexico, they have access to the freight talent you need. From carrier sales to tracking and tracing and everything in between, they can do the heavy lifting for you. So if you're ready to get your time back and want to move fast, check out Rapido Solutions Group. Visit gorapido.com to get started today. Hello, and welcome to the Bootstrapper's Guide to Logistics, the podcast highlighting founders doing it the way that doesn't get a lot of attention. We're here to change that by sharing their stories and inspiring others to take the leap.
It's a roller coaster ride. You might ultimately fail.
That's when I kind of knew I was onto something.
It was very hard.
It truly is building a legacy.
The more life you live, the more wisdom you have.
Because we are where we're supposed to be, kind of answering the call.
Don't shoulder entrepreneurship on your own.
I'm your host, Nate Schutz. Let's build something together from the ground up. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the show. Through the power of the internet and modern technology, we're going to have a fun conversation today that started on Twitter a long time ago and now is crossing multiple oceans and time zones. It's Friday my time, but it's Allison's Saturday, so we're doing actual time travel on the podcast now. But I would like to welcome Allison Cusack from Melbourne, which is just south of Brizzy, which is Brisbane in Australia. Allison is the founder of Cusack and Co., a law firm specializing in the maritime industry, which is where I got my start. And I think the maritime legal world is perhaps one of the most fascinating subjects of law altogether. So happy Saturday to you, Allison. Good morning and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. It's a very balmy top of 84 Fahrenheit today in Saturday morning in Australia. Very excited to be on the podcast.
Well, thanks for doing the temperature conversion for my American ears that don't know how to do Celsius.
Listen, you can't do as many reefer claims as I've done without knowing there's a little glitch when the conversions start coming through on the surgeons.
Well, Allison, I'm excited to finally meet somebody that I have followed for a long time on Twitter. And why don't we just start at the beginning? You've been doing the law for a while, and in that field, you could choose anything. You could choose business law or finance or family law, and you chose maritime law. What was the draw to getting into the ocean industry?
So you have to backtrack a fraction. I actually started off my university career studying electrical engineering.
Okay.
And so secret math nerd. It's very powerful when you're running those CPI conversions and your interest claims. And everything's to the nano, to the negative nine. It's invisible. And then I was not doing so great at that. The engineering part was not great. The maths was fantastic. But so I came across to business and I thought, I'll chuck law in because I can read really well. How hard can law be? I'm not gonna practice it. Joke's on me. And still a lot of things were like ethereal, like the concept of money really is just like a lot of trust. Companies are ethereal, IP. I was like, okay, can we do some hard physicality things? And then I came across maritime law and I was like, this gigantic ship is crashing into a wharf and then all the containers are spilling off. And I was like, boom, I can see the damage. Everyone can see it. I don't have to like prove to you this concept exists. I just show you a photo and on we go. And I was just hooked. I think there was something about it being so comically large compared to literally anything else that I could possibly do, having come from, you know, the 10 to the negative nine, like the nano to the comically large. I was kind of like sold on, you know, sort of talk about a pendulum swing. And yeah, I was just like, boom, as soon as I found out about maritime law, I was hooked. I was in. I could not be persuaded. You have no idea how many people were like, Allison, you're still in law school. Go out and get a job. And like, I was like, no, I will become a maritime lawyer. And now I style myself as the shipping lawyer. And I was like, persistence pays off, people. Persistence pays off.
So the size and scale of a steamship is something that most people will never actually understand. You can see a picture of one, but until you're standing next to one, you never have felt as small as you do when you see something that large moving.
Well, when you go inside one, I was lucky enough to get a tour. About 3 months in, I was working for a steamship line. And about 3 months in, they quickly clocked that I had no spatial skills whatsoever and could not consider. And I was like, I don't know, how big is that? And they're like, it's a 20-foot container. And I was like, we're metric here. Like, and they were like, oh, God, this is okay. So they took me down. One of the master mariners took me down, and I met the master of the vessel. And he's like, listen, the chief engineer's like, he's been up all night. He's having a sleep. And then my master mariner's like, well, could I take her around? And I was like, oh, yeah, I trust her with, you know, I trust the ship with you, Andy. Like, off you go. So I'm getting escorted around, and I go down to the engine room, and it's a three-story building. Like, basically, it's a three-story building. And I was like, oh, my God, now I understand why it's so expensive when it goes wrong and why you never want to put the wrong fuel in. And then the funny thing is, so we get back to the office, and one of the vessel planners had gone down, and he didn't want to wait for us. So he'd gone down earlier, and he came back, and I was like, oh, how was yours? Like, you've gone out to the ship and I've gone out to the ship. Like, how was yours? And he goes, you know, the chief engineer was asleep, so I couldn't go around to most of it. And I was like, should have come with us. We got a full tour. Like,
you've had the inside scoop since the beginning.
I had a giggle because one of the, like, systems on the bridge was a Saab. And I knew there was a friend at law school who was just obsessed with Saab cars. And I was like, oh, my God, they're everywhere. So, you know, just it's just a different beast when you've seen it and you've met the – so I met the seafarers very, very early on. And so I think that really helped me give an insight that it's not just copy and paste onto a documentation. It's not just widgets. It's not just whatever. Who cares? Like, the ocean is not our global factory line. Do you know what I mean? It's people, yeah. It's risk. And then once I'd met them, I was like, well, I'm going to protect you all from head office. I'm going to make sure that no one puts you at risk. And I was quite, I was quite bold in that. And I would have a few clashes with freight forwarders when the Solas VGM came in, the verified gross mass. They were like, no, well, like, whatever. And I was like, no, you do not threaten the life of my seafarers with your casual indifference. And I dare you to go down to the port and say the same thing. And then I was banned.
Can you explain Solas? Most people have never even heard of it.
Well, now you have a cool fun fact at drinks. When someone goes, hey, what do you reckon would happen if the Titanic never sank? We would never have the safety of life at sea convention, which underpins, like, safety, going to go rescue people when they're on their yachts, or you've got a sinking ship and we scramble and we race to go get you, all the maritime pollution, all the environmental aspects, all comes from this one international convention. So basically what happened was the Titanic sank, and as everyone knows, they were like, help, and the other ships are like, oh, sus.
We're busy.
Yeah, we're busy beating you. And they're like, oh, we're kind of like all dying. And then everyone was like, listen, if we don't have a rule that says you have to go save people, clearly we won't. We know that about ourselves now. So it took 1 year, 9 months, 6 days to conceive, draft, and finalize the first ever Solas convention. Unfortunately, the Great War got in the way. But then once they finished that, they came back and they ratified it. And the really, really cool thing about Solas is that it's never static. They will update and amend and change and realize there's new risks and change. And so it's a really great example of moving towards continuous improvement. If the International Maritime Organization can do it, so can anyone else on any range of issues, and I've definitely used that in my gender equity advocacy. But the verified gross mass is basically everyone's like, you know, it's 20 tons. And everyone's like, I just don't believe you anymore that it's 20 tons. I think you're just BSing me a little bit. And so now there's method one and method two. So basically you either pack your container, put a bolt seal on, run it over a weighbridge and go, boom, there's the weight. Or you're selling your individual components by mass. So, for instance, block of cheese. You sell it by so many grams and or pounds. And then you add all them together, add what we call our dunnage. So your cardboard and your pallets and all your other bits and pieces that aren't strictly cargo. And then you add it all together and go, that's the weight. But basically it was to stop ships tipping over.
Because people think that these ships can handle anything, but you talk about vessel load planning. And if you're going to put 10,000 containers onto a ship and you put them in the wrong place on that ship, it will tip over, the hull can crack. And so when people are putting together the manifest for a container and they're being questioned on how much something actually weighs, there's a very good reason. A truck will break its axle if there's too much weight on one axle. Ships are no different. And yet, because it's out of the public's eye, nobody really ever sees these things. They are often overlooked. And yet, I don't know what the number is, but there are thousands and thousands of seafarers that are out right now in some, you know, horrible storm in the Atlantic Ocean. And one of the missions that you have is to try to protect them. I think that's one of the neat ways to fight for the little guy.
Well, I'm all about fighting for the little guy. That's why I set up my business, because I worked for the Australian subsidiary of CMACGM, and you can't get more big guy than, you know, a carrier that when their cargo is threatened and their ship's threatened, the literal Navy turns up for them. It's like, oh, hey, we're a French carrier. And the French Navy are like, boom, here we are. Let's go. Personal escort. Like, you can't get bigger than that, right? And this was around the time that CMA had bought APL and all these. And HAPEG, which is the one that went under? God, my memory is going from 2016. One of the number six, not Hapag Lloyd, not Hamburg Sud, the other one.
Not double OCL?
No. Oh, my God. I can't believe I've forgotten this. Hanjin.
Got it.
Yep. Other H. The number six had collapsed, so everything was being subsumed. And I was like, I just saw how the power and the might of the big guy could just be thrown around, mm-hmm. and that was enough to best the little guy. And I'm like, I don't know. I just don't think it's fun winning that way, because, you know, I like to make life hard for myself.
You're doing it on difficult mode.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'll just always doing life in difficult mode. So that's why I set up my firm. I was like, no, I'm all out for the little guy. I want to switch to cargo interests. I want to weaponize the power of contracts. I want to.
Wait, are you saying that ocean contracts should actually be binding?
I had so many conversations at the start of COVID. People were like, oh, they just walked away from their contract. And I'm like, they cannot do that. Why would you let them? Why would you also just go, oh, okay, and I'll give up? No. Weaponize your contracts, leverage your contracts, leverage your relationships, and then put all that great relationship, customer service, all those deals, all those like, oh, yeah, and I'll look after you this time. Take all of that brilliant relationship and then use that to put it into a contract. So when your mate gets laid off as part of a 20% workforce reduction, and suddenly your go-to guy who always looks after you has disappeared and you're left going, crap, you've got the contract, right? Like a two-prong attack. Contract's there when the relationship breaks down. That is the rule. But to just go back, so there are over a million seafarers at sea at any one time. There's huge numbers. But I think of them as our seafarers, because we all, whether you're, and someone might be going, but I'm not in the logistics industry. You buy from the logistics industry indirectly. Everything on your shelf has probably come there by sea. Unless you're at the farmer's market and you're going, oh, yeah, I'm from the farm down the road. Here are my strawberries. If it's on a shelf and it's goods, it's clothing, it's like your white goods for your house, it's probably come by sea. They're all our seafarers. And I'm really trying to get that message out. So I just wanted to do that public service announcement. But yeah, the little guy gets screwed over, and it just, I don't know, maybe it's an Aussie underdog thing. It's just in our DNA to kind of stick it to everyone who's bigger than us.
Well, and I know that you're the youngest of several siblings, and you got through school in fewer years than most. And so perhaps you have a little chip on your shoulder that is actually motivating you to achieve what you've achieved.
Well, there's something about, someone said, oh, weren't you intimidated by that guy in that meeting because he was like well over 6 foot? I was like, listen, I'm 5'2". Everyone's taller than me. So when everyone's taller than you, it's just a matter of degrees, right? You've lost that advantage. Do you know what I mean? If some guy who's 6'4" comes up and tries to intimidate me, in the end, he just ends up putting his arm like on my head, being like, you're just like a really good height. Like it just disarms them because they're kind of like, I don't know, you're closest to the floor. And I don't know if it's a chip on the shoulder, me saying clearly with a chip on my shoulder, but I think it's more, I'm statistically emboldened that, you know, just because you're littler, just because you're younger, doesn't mean like you can't do it. So I think that emboldens me to just be a little bit more ridiculous and absurd and just be like, well, what are they going to do? What are they really going to do?
Well, we'll find out. So how did you then make the transition from working in a law firm to being ready to make the leap yourself? And obviously law firms aren't a typical or terribly capital intensive business. It's one of the benefits of operating in a model like that. It's like a recruiting agency, for example, not a ton of expense other than people and some technology. And yet your business makes it or doesn't make it based on what you do or don't do every single day. And so you still have to have a bunch of financial discipline and give up the safety of what you had before. What was there a final straw that like, I'm done with this and I'm going to go do it myself? Or was there something drawing you towards it? What was that like?
Well, so actually I wasn't working for a law firm. It's even worse than that. I was in-house. I'd never worked for a law firm in my life before I set up my own. Like it's the audacity at 31 to doing that. No, it's definitely a last straw. Some things went down that weren't handled well. And I just felt very, very let down by management and who, you know, they didn't have my back in the way I wanted them to have my back. And it just, I feel like the value set wasn't aligned and some of the senior management had made some pretty, pretty choice comments in a public sphere. Well, like in sort of like the large, like Christmas parties and stuff. And I just thought, you're really just showing me who you are as a person and you're showing me who you are as a management team. And I just, I just don't want to be here anymore because I know you guys don't have my back. I know I'm not respected. Why am I killing myself working 60, 70 hour weeks trying to, you know, in-house legal is, there is some like, I guess, you know, you're looking forward and you're trying to risk management, but it's a lot of cleanup on L13. And I was just like, if I keep cleaning up your messes, I don't feel like you're learning from them. And you're not thanking me for it and you're not appreciating me for it and you're actually openly disrespecting me whilst I'm doing my job. Not to say that the legal team was fantastic. My old boss, we're still in touch. I always like to make that delineation. But I just cracked it.
We'll be right back.
Have you heard about Bitfreighter and the EDI revolution? Bitfreighter helps companies automate communication with their freight partners through unlimited messaging and quoting. Traditional providers can't say that. The Bitfreighter team is also available 24/7 and responds immediately by phone, email, or yes, even text. Legacy providers can't say that either. So if you want to scale your operations to save time and money, come join the EDI revolution with us. Visit bitfreighter.com to get started today. So what are you like now as a boss yourself? Now that you're on the other side of the table?
Honestly, I've got one staff member and she says I'm the best boss she's ever had because I just don't get caught up in the performative crap. You know, they're like, oh, like I've got my kid or whatever. Or it's my kid's birthday. And I was like, well, log off early. Log off early. Your kid's home from school. Go log off early and hang out with your kid on her birthday. Mm-hmm. Like how does that affect me if they're going to come back and, you know, make up the time later? Do you know what I mean? Or they're like, oh, I my old bosses said I could never like properly prepare for meetings, or I couldn't take the time to like, you know, prep for meetings or write agendas or like, you know, do notes in a way that works for me. And I was like, it's just us two. Like if it makes you a better employee, go do it. If you've got to, you know, make slides fun and entertaining for yourself so you can have information ready in a way that you can pull it out quickly for me, I want you to pull out that information. I'm not going into your system and pulling out the information. So whatever works for you, I genuinely don't – like I almost think it's – I feel bad because I feel like it's an apathy, but it's focusing on the things that matter. Do you know what I mean? Like, and now we've gotten to the place where we can be really robustly honest, and it's so helpful because it works both ways. She'll be like, hey, can you do this? And I'm like, I just don't want to. I just don't want to. And so for instance, she was like, hey, I need you to write like a white paper or like a book. And I was like, you know, 10 common things that go wrong with cargo and shipping. I was like, oh, I don't want to. It sounds so boring. I don't want to write it. I don't think anyone's going to want to read it. And she's like, well, you wanted a lead gen, right? For your newsletter. Mm-hmm. So, and I said, well, listen, you've been starting to draw comics in your spare time. Let's just make a comic about it instead, because I physically do not want to write a white paper right this second. And she's like, but I'm not very good. And I said, you know what? You're the best at drawing digital comics in the firm. You are the number one. You are the best we have. Let's
most
do it.
Qualified.
And then, and I was like, she's like, but what if it's terrible? I was like, it's still going to be better than a white paper on 10 common things that happen with, like, I was like, can you hear the boredom in my voice? And so anyways, I gave her 5 common issues that happened with cargo at sea, and she drew them. And then she turned me into a superhero, which I was like, listen, I'm not mad about that. I'm kind of scared of the public backlash, being like, who does she think she is? And then we launched Container Jack, and it went like around the world. It went viral. It was in the Turkish shipping news, being like, oh, Australian lawyer has launched like this digital comic book. And everyone's like, oh, I love it. And that, and that really solidified to me that who am I cosplaying for? Like, who am I cosplaying being this very serious, I have to get to work at 9 and I have to work until like blah, blah, blah. And I'm there going, I take meetings with people in America. I take meetings with people in Europe. Like, my schedule is all over the place. I want to do an 8 a.m. podcast on a Saturday. And it really solidified to me that the shipping industry is just as nerdy about shipping as I am. And that if I think of myself as the end customer, then it's probably gonna work really well. I mean, I did a depth chart when the APL England containers went overboard because their CEO came out and said, oh, dropped to a depth of 3,000 meters. And I was like, I can't even fathom how deep that is. Pun very much intended. If I can't work it out, then other people probably can't work it out. So we did a depth chart and it had like scuba diver, whale, submarine, and then it had like the A&L containers because it was an A&L chartered ship, and then it had the RMS Titanic. So everyone could have it. And then everyone loved it, and then everyone kept, this is on LinkedIn, everyone kept adding to it. So they would take the picture and they would extend it down, and then someone put the Hope Diamond, and then someone put Drake at the bottom of it. Just became a meme on LinkedIn. Granted, it was lockdown. I'm going to give everyone that. But I just thought, yeah, so because I could be honest, because I had encouraged honesty with her and I was displaying honesty, I got a comic book. So I think that that really proves that by being a, you know, like, for instance, she'll say, okay, I've done this slide deck. And I'm like, oh, I just don't like the color scheme. And she's like, why not? And earlier I would have tried to just make up some BS answer about like whatever. And I was like, listen, it just reminds me of like my high school best friend who we had a massive falling out, and that color just reminds me of her. And it just makes me rationally like annoyed at that color. And she's like, cool, it's on the no list. Like, you can just be a real person and go, listen, some things I just don't like them and I don't want to have to justify them. And now, like, we're at that point where she, because otherwise she's there going, oh, what didn't I foresee? What didn't I like plan for? Like, oh, I don't know my boss. I don't know the business. I don't know the color scheme. I don't know this or that. And I was like, listen, it's, yeah, like my best friend from high school who I had a falling out with, like, it just reminds me of her. Yeah, it's 20 years ago, but still things just, some things are very strong and you're just like, it is what it is and I'm just going to own it. And then they're like, oh, cool. And so they're not self-doubting themselves because they're like, yeah, it's just a particular preference that has no rhyme or reason, that it's very much not a me performance thing, so I can just accept it and move on. So
what I love about that, Allison, is just by being yourself and not being performative, you can actually enjoy what you do more fully, and then other people can actually, you can unlock in other people what makes them uniquely them. What we do is very important. That's for sure. We've got truck drivers and people in warehouses and goods moving all over the world. And it's all very, very important. And none of us have a clue what's going on. At the same time, we are not masters of the world. The global supply chain is a loosely orchestrated, constant disaster that's being fixed in real time with 100 decisions an hour in an Excel file in the bottom of a skyscraper. And there is no order. There is no plan. We're all figuring it out as we go.
That is the best. That is the best description I've ever heard of the shipping industry. And I need you to put that on merch so I can have okay. It on a mug. I'd say to people, the shipping industry succeeds despite its own best efforts to thwart it. There should be so many more things exploding on ships than they do. Just from the knowledge that I have, I'm like, it is sustained miracles that keep those ships floating sometimes, because I'm thinking, yeah, some of those things should have gone absolutely sideways. And by sheer dumb luck, it did not. There was no strategy in that. That was a wait and see and wait and hope and wait and pray and go, my God.
Well, this is being your own boss affords you the opportunity to do this in a way that working in, you know, inside counsel, you probably couldn't fully express yourself. And yet being a small business owner comes with a bunch of drawbacks. What do you dislike about owning a firm?
What do I dislike? I did dislike invoicing for a long time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then I got software. So that was a good solution. Manual is not the way to go. I think the thing I dislike the most is sometimes I would like an army behind me. Sometimes I would like to be a little more feared. Do you know what I mean? Like, sure. I don't know if you've seen, it's like, oh, we can't upset them. They're a big player in the game. And I'm like, I would like that kind of giving, yeah, clout. I mean, I do think I'm batting above my average. You know, one sole practitioner lawyer in Melbourne at the bottom of the world. You know, I think I've made some pretty good inroads. But you know, sometimes it would be nice to be able to preemptively fend off people playing silly buggers when they try things on because they think I'm small, and so therefore I am small, and therefore I'm able to be bullied. People really try and bully me, and, you know, it's annoying. And I, you know, they don't win, but it's just, I feel like it's a lot more shenanigans that go on and chew up my time than other people may have to handle.
Unpack so, yeah, that more. What do you mean by other people might have to handle?
Well, I just don't think that people are trying on the same stuff with, you know, London shipping partners of like multinational firms. Sure. You know what I mean? Like they're not going to say the dumb, stupid stuff that they say to me. And some of it may be gender. I try not to default to that unless it's glaringly obvious. But some of it's just, oh, well, you know, who are you? You don't know anything. I'm like, I know a lot. And there's just this arrogance Do you know what I mean? Mm, they come from a national firm, or they come from a multinational firm, or they're a multinational, you know, they're a big shipping line. They're a billion-dollar shipping line. They're a multi-million dollar, you know, freight forwarding outfit or whatever. And it's just this kind of immediate pegging of, well, I'm here and you're immediately below me. And I mean, yes, it reveals a lot about who they are as people and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I'd like to not have to introspect and give people the benefit of the doubt all the time. And people sort of go, Alison, sometimes you're quite straightforward. And I was like, yes, because I'm tired and I've learned from experience that this is just the shortcut that works for me. Do you know what I mean? I'm like,
you have to leverage every asset that you have to get the outcomes that you're working towards. And if you are of smaller size, not physically, but of as an organization, you do have to sometimes punch back to get the respect that you deserve. And our industry is not always the most tolerant. The clientele that, you know, is out there is not always as progressive about treating people equally. And there's a chance for, there was a great webinar earlier this week that a handful of folks put on that I attended about women in trucking and, you know, getting into some of the gender dynamics that happen in our industry and how we all have a responsibility to solve different parts of it. And I was really proud to listen to that conversation because the it was led by men. There was four men, and they were talking about what is their responsibility as men in an industry where most of the offenses are committed by men, and that it isn't, Alison, you need to stand up for yourself. No, it is sometimes somebody else in the room needs to stand up and say, stop interrupting her, let her finish, let her say her thing. That was unprofessional. And so there is a shared responsibility that all of us with any degree of influence have. And this happens to be the one place that I have some influence because I've got a following. And if you're listening and you disagree with what I'm saying, I'm sorry. If I lose you as a listener because of this topic, that's tough. I'm okay. I accept that. And we do have a responsibility to not just level the playing field, but to call out the bad behavior. Like, we have to be the ones to do it because it's typically other men, often in positions of power, that are the ones doing the offending. So that's my rant for the day.
No. I'm here for the rant. And that's the thing, is that it is so quick for people to take my bubbliness and my enthusiasm as pushover niceness. And so people go, oh, Alison, like, why, you know, I know you, like, you know, personally, like, why do you sort of have this sort of like code switching almost? And I said, because they take it too far. They always take it too far. And then I have to like switch back and be like, you know, like straight down the line. And, you know, I would like to just be able to go to events and just be bubbly and fun and not be accused of flirting or not be accused of like sleeping my way around and not have people inappropriately touch me and, you know, all that kind of crap. And that would be amazing and delightful. And it's like, oh, well, just don't go to the events then. Oh, okay, cool. Like, I can just be shut out of the industry. Like, sorry, I refuse to let bad people stop me from participating in an industry that I love. They can get out. And so I would just take up as much space in whatever way. Because when I call out bad people, they go, well, sorry, people's bad behaviors. They go, oh, but that's just how they are.
Yeah.
Great. That's just how I am.
Yep.
And I will call out, and people go, well, who have you called out? I did a keynote for the IMO Secretary General talking about gender equity.
Can you explain the IMO? Most people don't even know what that is.
Absolutely. So the IMO is the International Maritime Organization, and it sits under the UN. So it's the shipping arm of the UN.
So it's kind of a big deal
just a little. So the Secretary General had flown into Australia for 2.5 days, big deal, because he'd never been there before. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like, 2.5 days, we've got a jam pack it. So they had this dinner, and it was the year where the theme for the entire IMO's year-long theme was empowering women in the maritime community. And so I was one of three keynote speakers chosen. And so I was, I've never been more like, I was like, okay, I'm just going to call out every single bad actor by name and just go out in a blaze of glory and just take this moment. And I was like, no, I can't do that. I'll ruin my career forever. And then I was like, maybe I'll just say that like everything's going great and like we're really trying and come on team. And I was like, I can't do that. And I was talking to my friend and I said, I don't know. Cause I'd asked the Maritime Safety Authority who was hosting it. I said, do you need an advanced copy of my speech? And they said, no. And my mum was like, that was a bad, bad decision by them to not vet your speech. Because I get pretty fiery and pretty passionate and I like to do pretty strong, empowering speeches because I'm trying to get past the people in the audiences, mainly women, like their imposter syndrome. Like I'm speaking to their imposter syndrome. And that's why I'm so like over the top. And so I was speaking to my friend and I said, I don't know what to do. And he goes, why do you want to play it safe? And I said, I want to play it safe so that they let me back. And he goes, but if you're not going to take advantage of the opportunity this time, what makes you think you'd take advantage of the opportunity next time? And I was like, wow. Oh, damn it. And it was a huge revelation for me because I was like, this is the moment. This is the time to go. If you're going to do something, and it really became this lightning rod of who was I going to be in the moment that mattered? And I'm very, very big on the moments that matter. If you don't speak up in the moment that matters, I don't want to have your groveling apologies the next week for hours and hours saying, I'm sorry, Alison, I didn't say the right thing. Or I didn't do the right thing. Like, oh, we can do this. I'm like, no, you didn't speak up in the moment that matters. You were actually a coward. And I know that's strong words, but if you're not going to speak up from when you're in a position of power, when you're not the victim, when you're the bystander and you have a very strong influential role in the industry and you're witnessing that and you don't speak up in the moment, one, how dare you ever ask the victim to have to speak up when they're actively being victimized and you know, the flooding of shame and the guilt and the embarrassment and the I don't belong and, oh, my God, I don't know how to respond to this because if I respond to it, like, and I just laugh and giggle because I'm super embarrassed and I'm trying to remain safe, then I've accepted it. And if I call it out, then I'm the fun police and I'm the B word. I don't know how far the bad language rule goes in this show.
We keep it pretty clean, but keep going. You're doing great.
You're the B word and all of those things, right? Like it's a polarizing response. There's not that range. And if you're the bystander and you're a very senior person in the industry and you see that and you don't say anything and you call me the next week and go, oh, Alison, I am sorry. And I'm like, no, you're a coward. You're a coward. And you've lost all integrity on the things that you talk about. Oh, we've got to do respect and we've got to, but no, because if you can't do it with your lofty CEO position and watch it and watch me get victimized and don't help me in the moment, you are a coward. And I will forever view you as a coward and I will tell other people that I view you as a coward because in the moment that mattered, you didn't help and that's who you truly are as a person because you had the power to stop something happening to me and you didn't. And that is my rant. But
for me, how did the speech end?
Oh, that wasn't the speech. That was a separate thing. My speech was actually around, what was it? Fearless Pursuit of Imperfect Progress. My speech title was Fearless Pursuit of Imperfect Progress. And I said, if the IMO can imperfectly step forward with SOLAS and make big, strong, you know, moves like the verified gross mass, which upset literally everyone worldwide, but was necessary. I said, the shipping industry can do two things really well. They can have hard conversations and they can do hard things. They can take a ship that's breaking apart, take it apart, take the two separate bits, ship it halfway around the ocean and weld it back together. That's a pretty hard thing. We have had countless issues where we had a multi-million dollar super yacht wash overboard en route to defend its race title, and someone had to call up the owner and say, hey, your yacht isn't so much floating as flotsam. And we're sorry about that. And I said, if you can tell shippers every day bad news, then you can tell Keith from accounting to stop it with his inappropriate jokes. Like, you can't tell me that you don't have this massive skill set of having hard conversations and then somehow that's not transferable to people doing bad, you know, when you see bad behavior, you can't call that out. Like, you can call out safety things and say, well, that container's overweight, that's hazardous goods, you haven't packed that properly, we're going to reject your cargo, we're going to be 959 and kick it out because it's not weighing properly. You are happy to tell the biggest shipper in the world, we've rejected your cargo. But when you're at an event and someone says something inappropriate, you can't go, oi, no, we don't do that here. Like, don't sell me the, if I hadn't seen your skill set as an industry, maybe I would let you off. But you can't tell me, oh, we're an amazing industry, we do all these complicated, hard things, and we have all these hard conversations, and we talk about green fuel, and we talk about seafarer safety, and we blah, 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 and then go, oh my God, telling some dude in the industry that, like, he can't make really bad, dirty jokes is like, oh my God, I can't possibly do that. And if you want to sell the myth about hiring on merit and promoting on merit in this industry, then hold them to that standard, because you're trying to tell me they have the skill set. That also means they have the skill set to call out bad behavior, because it's also a legal obligation on them as a business owner. And if they don't have the skill set, then why were they promoted? Maybe they weren't the best for the job and you should fire them. And all the CEOs who are going around parading saying, I'm the best, but oh, I can't have that hard conversation. And you believe in merit and you sell merit and you proclaim merit, then your own, by your own consciousness, you should stand aside because you've admitted that you're not actually the best and you're not the best candidate for the job. So if you can go toe-to-toe with unions and you can go toe-to-toe with your political representatives and you can go toe-to-toe with your customers, then you can do the rest. And so you're choosing to not do the rest, and I'm calling BS on your merit ability. So get
out.
You're
the best candidate for this job, which is sharing honestly really impactful conversations with an industry that absolutely needs to hear it. And in you're doing it in a way that, like, I'm captivated. Like, I you have my full attention. You are so well spoken in how you articulate these ideas, and you've got so much life and personality that I can't help but listen. And so you have a platform here for, you know, two more minutes before we run out of audio. Not that there's any tape, but we have calendars. So I do think you are the right candidate to speak to the industry. What message would you want to leave people who are listening?
You have way more power than you realize, whether it's about affecting cultural change in your organization, affecting cultural change in your friendship group, whether it's about not being bullied by shipping lines as a BCO. You have so much more power than you think. And I want you to take that. I want you to harness it and for good, not for your own self, because I started my law firm with no dollars, with no clients, with no pipeline, with no presence, with no pedigree. And I've built this power base because the alternative was just not acceptable to me. So it ceased to become a choice. It was forward or nothing. And so I went forward as fast as I could.
I mean, I'm sitting in a chair, but I just want to stand up and clap. And I'm so glad that we got to have this conversation and bridge tens of thousands, or not, maybe not tens of thousands. I'm not very good at geography, thousands of miles and time zones and cultures, but we share a common industry. We share a common humanity and a lot of the same sense of humor. You're better at accents than I am. We didn't get to get too deep into that. We're going to have to do a whole panel sometime on a LinkedIn live event or something, because there's a whole lot more that we couldn't get to today. But thank you for being so brave and bold and speaking up for good. And I know you're still early in your journey. You're 5-6 years in to having an impact on the industry. But you have a lot ahead of you that I know you're going to be ready for some big fights. And I'm in your corner now, too. Whatever we can do to support you, help spread awareness, grow your client base, that's what we're all about. We love the underdog. And again, just thank you so much. We're rooting for you, Allison.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And as someone from the future is looking bright.
That's brilliant. We will end on that note. Have a great rest of your weekend, Allison, and we will catch up soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Bootstrapper's Guide to Logistics, and a special thank you to our sponsors and the team behind the scenes who make it all possible. Be sure to like, follow, or subscribe to the podcast to get the latest updates. To learn more about the show and connect with the growing community of entrepreneurs, visit logisticsfounders.com. And of course, thank you to all the founders who trust us to share their stories.